You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 15.
Episode 39.
This is Writing Excuses. Translation with guest Alex Schwartzman. 15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Lottie.
And we have our special guest here today, Alex Schwartzman. Alex, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm a writer, editor, and translator. I've had over 100 short stories published all over the place, places like Analog and Strange Horizons and Fireside and many other markets. I've edited over a dozen anthologies, primarily the Unidentified Funny Objects Anthology Series, which is an annual anthology of humor, science fiction, and fantasy. And as of about 5 or 6 years ago, because I felt like I didn't have enough on my plate, I decided to share really, really cool Russian science fiction stories with fellow American fans. And so my journey into the translation began. So now I've had translations published in the magazine of fantasy and science fiction, Apex, Samovar, and many other places, and I've done a number of longer projects as well. So I've been spending more and more time in translation lately.
Cool.
Awesome.
Excellent. Well, I am very excited to have both Alex and Lottie on this one because they have both done a lot of translation work. And we got actually a lot of questions from our listeners about translation, both from the side of the translator, how does it work? And from the side of the author, you know, how do you get your stuff translated and how does that work? Let's start from the translator. Can talk to us a little bit about the ins and outs of translating somebody else's work into a different language.
So the first question to ask is what kind of translation you're doing. There's literary translation, which is translating fiction essentially. And then there is a scholarly translation, something that you're doing for university, for a library project, things like that. So that kind of translation is really different. In that kind of translation, the fealty is always to the text. You don't care how nice it is to read. You don't care how smooth it is. Your job is to correlate it almost word for word as clearly as possible and with lots and lots of footnotes. Now, footnotes are the tool of the devil. We do not use footnotes as much as possible in literary translation. Some people will argue with that, but that's my stance, and I will die on that hill. Now, with literary translation, my job is to satisfy the reader before satisfying the writer. which means that I will betray the writer every once in a while and stab them in the back gently, very gently, in order to make the story more readable for the intended audience. And there is a concept in translation for that. It comes from Italian. It's called traditore trattatore. What that means is to translate is to betray. That concept originated when the French translated Dante and the Italians felt that they've done so badly. So they came up with that because Dante's language is so rich, they felt the translation was a betrayal of his work. Now, we translators use that term to say, hey, we need to betray someone. Sometimes we betray the writer in favor of the reader, and sometimes we're forced to betray the reader to better translate what the writer had to say.
That is a fascinating concept to me. I'm sorry, Lottie, go ahead.
Yeah, there are also different schools of translation, and there are a few that will say that it's fine for you to see the writer or the original behind the curtains. And that is lately, I think nowadays, has fallen disuse. Nobody does that anymore. And currently most translations, especially literary translations, will say that a translation is supposed to be a window. And as a translator, you want to make that window look like it's not there. So you're polishing the glass to the last point so that people will look into the room and they will feel like there is no window. So most people, I think most translators would agree that you're more often than not betraying the author to make it more readable and more pleasant to the reader. Maybe it's not a great thing to hear.
No, this is fascinating to me, especially because recently kind of the news hit the internet of this 120-year-old Icelandic translation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, which once somebody who knew the original took a good look at it, it turns out to be just essentially fan fiction of Dracula, wildly rewritten, which I think is clearly an extreme case. But this idea that you would change things and betray the author in some sense, I'm sure there's a very fine line. Can you give us any examples of when you have had to betray the author in the service of the reader?
Certainly. And you don't actually have to go 120 years back to find a good example of this. Ken Liu, who is, few would argue, is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, translators working in genre today, was working on the three-body problem, which won the Hugo, as you know. And the style in which the body problem was written is very different from the way novels are written in English. So in the body problem, you didn't have dialogue the way that we think of dialogue. You didn't have just clearly marked, this person said this, this person said this. Instead, you had the narrator telling you, person A said this while he smoked a cigarette. Person B responded with this and she did this. All of this is in a block of text. That block of text would be almost entirely unreadable to an average Western reader who is used to novels the way that we know of novels for hundreds of years. And so Ken had a decision to make. He could either be loyal to the author and translate the block of text as it was, which would make it really, really difficult for most of us to enjoy the actual plot of the book, the actual text, or he could significantly rework those parts and turn them into actual dialogue. So the great advantage of working with living authors is that we can ask them. And so Ken was able to ask the author, Xi Jin Liu, whether or not he could make those changes, and he got those approved. And so he made significant changes to that. We all do these sort of things. I've had to find concepts and find popular culture references that are equivalents in English to those that an original author would use. So if you're translating a story from English to another language and the story says that, somebody was just ran into a wall like in the Roadrunner cartoon, you're assuming that most of your readers are familiar with Roadrunner. But the readers in China or in Nigeria or in Russia might not be familiar with Roadrunner. So you have to find an equivalent cartoon there to use in this instance. And of course, you're not going to have 100% correlation. It's going to be a little bit different, and that's where the art of translation versus the technical skill of translation comes into play.
I have a fun fact about this. J.K. Rowling speaks Portuguese because she lived in Portugal for a while. So she was involved in some of the translations of the Harry Potter, the different houses, how the school was called in Brazilian Portuguese. The translator actually checked with her for a few of the names. Oh, yeah. And I also, another interesting point is that how each culture is going to think about how far they can go from the original when they're doing their translation. So very often, I would say that French translation really goes much further from the original when translating to make it more sound more French. And it has a lot to do with how the country thinks about the readers and thinks about how the readers receive translation. So in Brazil, people are very used to reading translations. It's not a big deal. It's not quite the same in the US. So there is this sense that it needs to be adapted more so the readers will interact with it more.
Hey, writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
Well, let's go ahead and pause here for our book of the week. Alex, I think you had something you wanted to share with us.
Sure. So in this case, it's actually a magazine, and I wanted to highlight Samovar. Samovar is affiliated with Strange Horizons, but it's actually sort of its own thing. And they are one of only two magazines in our field that are exclusively focused on international fictions. Samovar publishes each story both in translation and in the original. So people who are able to compare the texts can do so. I've had several short stories appear there. And most recently, there was a story called The Green Hills of Dmitry Totsky, which is a really weird story in a, sort of a, the Vandermeer style of weird, I would say, by a Russian Kazakh author named Eldar Safin. And it's his first English language publication. And the story is so strange and so unusual that it was just a pleasure to get to translate it. And so I wanted to to highlight that and highlight his work since it's his first appearance, which is what we translators love to do. We love to bring material that you would not otherwise have access to.
Oh, that's wonderful. One of the things that occurred to me as you were both speaking was that one of the biggest problems when you're doing translation is wordplay, which often winds up affecting the titles, because a lot of things I think you can get around with by providing additional context, but titles wind up being really, really tricky. Like I have my Shades of Milk and Honey in the Japanese is, I think, Miss Ellsworth's Magical Neighbor, because the biblical reference of milk and land of milk and honey is meaningless. Calculating Stars doesn't actually translate well because there's a joke there. So it's, or not a joke, but there's some wordplay with the different ways that you can use calculating. So what do you, is that a piece that the translator thinks about, or is it much like books here that it is often the sales and marketing department that thinks about what the new title should be?
Oh, it has to be the translator, because the translator understands what the load, what the cultural load and the meaning of the pun is in the original language. The marketing department will not have the same benefit, most likely. So I actually have a perfect example for this. One of my favorite stories that I've translated, which also was published in Samovar, as a matter of fact, was a story by Katerina Bachila, writing as K.A. Tirina. And the name of the story in Russian is Biasna Zvanya. Now, Biasna Zvanya, if you change one letter, could mean one of two things. It could either mean untitled, or it could mean the demon of the name. So Bias is a demon, and Bias is without. So I had to come up, and this is relevant. I couldn't just randomly change the name of the story without referencing it, because this is actually referenced in the text itself. So I had to find something that was even remotely workable with the plot of the story. So the name of the story in English ended up being Untilted. And yeah, Untilted playing off of Untitled.
Right.
And so it's an intentional misspelling that's mentioned in the story and is justified within the story itself.
Wow.
I will mention, though, that it varies. If you're dealing with a very commercial publishing house, it is possible that marketing will just change the title. And that has happened to me a couple of times.
Yeah, let's talk about this from the author's side as well. And I suspect I know the answer to this one up front. But when someone is writing a book, knowing that it will be, or hoping that it will be, translated, is there anything they can or should do to make that process easier?
I would think not. I think when you're creating a work, whether it's a novel, a short story, a screenplay, any creative endeavor, you're creating it for the medium in which you're working. So if you stop yourself and start thinking, well, how is this going to work in my audiobook? How is this going to work in translation? How is this going to work if somebody tries to adapt this to screen? You are literally limiting yourself instead of being as creative and telling as interesting a story as you can. So no, I don't think you should. I think your job is to tell the best possible story in the medium, and then let the professionals figure out how to convert that to podcast, to translation, to any other medium if it is indeed possible.
And that is what I expected you to say. So hooray, I was right.
Yay!
I'm gonna fight against that, though.
Okay, cool.
Because since I do audiobooks, I actually do think about it when I write with audiobooks. But I've also talked to other translators, and they've said that there are some things that you can think about that when it's time to have your work translated, that can make it easier. For instance, if you know that you've done wordplay in something, if you make a note of it so that when the translation, when they're like, this book is going to translation, that you can have a note ready for the translator about this is the wordplay, because one of the things that I've, like, not all translators are equal, and some of them will not actually catch the wordplay that you have put in, or the deep cultural significance of a thing, so that there are some things you can do that don't involve erasing your creativity.
Absolutely.
Agreed. I have like 1,000 translator stories that I would love to tell, but we don't have time. We in fact are out of time, but I want to ask 2 more very quick questions. If someone out there is writing a book and they are hoping to have it, you know, translated into other languages so more people can read it, how do you go about selling foreign rights, selling your book into foreign markets? And then how do you get that work translated?
And I think you can answer this from a novel or short fiction.
Yes.
So it's actually 2 completely different answers, though. For novels, your agent and your publisher will work to sell the rights, and your involvement in this may actually be minimal. You will work with a translator, of course, if you're able to, and you'll answer questions, but you aren't necessarily going to do a lot to influence. The best way to sell your novel in translation is just to do really well with your novel in English or whatever original language that it came out in. But for short fiction, it's a completely different landscape because there's very little money involved. And so agents and you know, all these professionals generally will not be involved. What ends up happening with the vast majority of short stories that are translated is you have translators who are volunteers, who are fans themselves, like myself, find the story, read it, fall in love with the story, and then reach out to the author and ask their permission to translate the story. Once I translate the story, I then shop it around to short fiction markets in the same way as I would my own short story. I send the submissions with a cover letter and all that, and you prearrange with the author. Typically, the deal is if you sell a story to somewhere like fantasy and science fiction or whatever, you split the money 50-50. There's no money up front. Nobody's paying you because typically for professional translation, the rates are about 10 to 15 cents per word. So that's already more than most markets will pay, you know, for the translation. So the money is not there. And as such, it has to be a labor of love for the translator, and they have to be willing to do this on spec overwhelming majority of the time.
Lottie, did you have something that you wanted to say about that too?
Yeah, just on the editor and agent side, since I have that side of the experience, I would just kind of to give an overview to everyone on how that works. Once we have a manuscript, we'll decide at which point we're sending out the manuscript for international publishers. So we might do that at the first point when it's being sold and here into the US publishing houses, or we might do that when it's already closer to publication, depending on what shape the manuscript's in. And then that's going to be sent to publishing houses around the world who publish that kind of book. And I think the thing to keep in mind here is that the person who's deciding if they're publishing that or not is also an editor in a different country. I don't know if that is obvious for everyone. So we're talking to editors again. It's a whole new submission process. And what's interesting is that often there are things that people think will not work internationally, and then the book becomes really big in the US and suddenly it works. So even the idea that there's something that you can do or shouldn't do to not make it harder or to make it easier for the translator to translate, really, it depends on an editor in a different country connecting to the story and seeing value in making that translation.
Well, that's a great note to wrap up on. So let's leave our listeners with a little bit of a homework. Alex, do you have something to help them with?
Sure. So the prompt that I came up with is linguistic misunderstanding. I would love for all of you to write a story where the characters are in trouble in some way because of a cultural or a linguistic misunderstanding. Something has gone wrong in translation, and really build that into the story. Don't just have that be an inciting incident and then completely walk away from that.
That's a great suggestion.
That's fantastic.
All right. You are out of excuses. Now go write. Does anyone want to say that again in another language?
Yes. Yes, please do that.
У вас больше нет никаких причин не работать. Идите пишите.
Chega de desculpas. Hora de escrever.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.